morning. Call our first case for today, 11 AP 1956, James E. Kuchinski versus Speedway Super America. Arguing on behalf of Mr. Kuchinski is Ross Anderson. Mr. Anderson, you may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Ross Anderson, and I represent the plaintiffs, James and Cynthia Kuchinski, in this case. This case is tailor-made for the application of the absent witness instruction. On the day of the accident, back in February of 2007, Mr. Kuchinski slipped and fell when he was entering a Speedway Super America gas station in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He was not familiar with the store. It was snowing lightly that morning and had been snowing all morning. The snow covered a portion of the curb just in front of the entranceway to the store. The curb itself was painted yellow, but Mr. Kuchinski only saw white because of the snow accumulation. He was paying attention as he was walking inside to pay his bill for the gas that he was just purchasing. He fell at that point and seriously fractured his right arm and wrist. As he was laying on the ground, he observed three employees in the Super America store. They kept working. One was stocking shelves, and two were working as cashiers. While he was laying there, one of the employees came out and put some salt on another part of the sidewalk. The case went to verdict. It was tried in front of Judge Seifert in Milwaukee County. The case went to verdict on theories of negligence and safe place. Super America argued that the accident was the fault of Mr. Kuchinski and argued contributory negligence. The jury found in favor of Mr. and Mrs. Kuchinski and returned a verdict of $327,000. At the trial, Super America made the tactical decision to call no witnesses on its behalf.
Counsel, I wonder what is in the record to indicate that Super America had any greater ability to locate the former employees several years after the injury?
There is nothing in the record about the ability to nothing evidentiary in the record about the ability to locate those witnesses. Just a brief bit of background. Super America was asked in an interrogatory to disclose all persons who might have knowledge of the facts of the accident.
Sure.
And they disclosed five employees working at the store that day. Four of them had last known addresses in the Milwaukee area, three in Milwaukee, one in Waukesha, and one had an address in Pennsylvania. In addition, on Super America's witness list, they identified the same five people as the only employee representatives that they intended to call at the trial, saying that those witnesses were intended to testify about Super America's policies and procedures for snow removal.
But so what? I mean, could your client have subpoenaed those witnesses?
Certainly we could have. And the question is, the question on availability is really, is it more natural for Super America to call those employees or former employees?
And I noticed you were starting to go down the track that piqued my interest because you relied on it to a fair extent in the briefs. And that is that they indicated they were going to call those witnesses. You know, and I know, that many times witnesses who are intended to be called for one reason or another simply are not called. And so I ask, and I don't ask it sarcastically, so what if they said they were going to call the witnesses and then they didn't? Isn't that their right?
Well, certainly it's their right. That's okay. Correct. But it's also our right to ask for the absent witness instruction if it's more natural that they call those witnesses.
Yeah, okay, I was just wondering why you were placing such heavy emphasis on the fact that they said they were going to call them. You're moving now into a separate area, which is the witnesses who would have greater knowledge, because certainly there would have been present employees who, perhaps with some exploration, it could have been revealed, have knowledge about the store policies, practices, training, customs, and procedures. And you're about to say, well, not necessarily at the time of the injury, but we don't know that.
No, we don't know that, and you're absolutely correct, because the absent witness instruction that was given by Judge Seifert, we believe, applied not only to the five people that they had identified on their witness list, but also the fact that they made the decision not to call anyone to testify about the policies and procedures that they had in place for keeping the premises safe, for salting and shoveling and doing all of that.
And that's because they said, look, we've got a video, a DVD, that's pretty optically clear, and we think that's enough to show who exactly was at fault for this trip and fall, not slip and fall. I know the distinction that you made. And so the jury, that's all they need.
And that was their decision. There's no question about that. But it was also their decision not to call a single witness to testify about that. And while the video did show Mr. Kochanski approaching the store and his fall, it did not show or did not reveal whether any steps had been taken by the Super America employees to clean or clear that area on the day of the accident. There was nothing on the video showing that anyone had salted that area right in front of the main entranceway to the gas station, nor did the video show anything about what Super America's policies and procedures were for keeping that area clear in the event of a snow.
Sure, but it's their position that the video was so clear that it shows the yellow stripe, that it shows the step up, that we don't need to call anybody because this is their position.
Well, the position is contributory negligence. Isn't that their position?
Based upon the factual assertion that the video is so clear that he had to have been able to see the step-up curb.
Yes, sir, but that walks – you're correct, Justice Gableman, that was their position. But that also walks right into Judge Seifert's discretionary finding at the trial where he believed the jury was entitled to know what Super America's policies and procedures were at the time of the accident and what steps had been taken by those employees to follow those procedures or keep the premises as safe as their nature would reasonably permit.
Why is the policies of Super America at issue here? Why do they have – what if they have no policies? Why is their policies at issue?
Well,
it wasn't
a
safe place claim, was it?
Yes, it was a safe place
claim. It
went to the jury on –
So it was because of the safe place claim?
Yes, ma'am. It went to the jury on safe place and negligence.
Okay.
And the negligence was failure to maintain. That was the cause of action of the first claim. Is that correct?
Yes.
So the policies and procedures are relevant to the maintenance? Is that your position?
That is correct.
Why didn't you subpoena them and call them adversely?
The decision was made not to do that. It was anticipated that Super America was going to call one or more of them. It was not done. That was our decision not to call them adversely.
Okay, I just wondered. Were you assured? I mean, did Super America say, other than their witness list, did they say, don't bother subpoenaing them, we're going to have them appear?
No. We're
like
not
that?
Taking the position we were okay. Misled or prevented from doing it or something. It was our decision not to subpoena them.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to rely on the plaintiff who testified, right?
We were relying on Mr. Kochanski to testify. His doctor and his wife also testified, but primarily Mr. Kochanski to testify about what happened.
But from his standpoint.
From his standpoint.
And then his medical testimony.
Yes.
Before we proceed, though, if you should succeed on the absent witness instruction issue, your view is that you would then, that this court, if I understood your brief, would hold that the trial court, would uphold the trial court verdict in effect?
Well, you could either uphold the trial court in terms of giving the instruction, or you could rule that while it might have been error to give the instruction,
not
it was prejudicial. Not prejudicial.
I understand
error.
That, but you win on this issue, if that's
yes.
But according to the Court of Appeals, there were two other issues that the defendant raised in the Court of Appeals, and they are that the evidence does not support the verdict, right?
Correct.
And the other one is a reversal in the interest of justice. Now, in the trial court, it seemed to me that the two sides just weren't even reaching the same issue. Your issue was they were negligent, and their issue was you were negligent, or your client was negligent.
Correct.
And at the when I reread the petition for review, that continued to be their position. Your position was this was a good instruction. Their position was your client was totally negligent. Only two jurors so found that your client was negligent. Okay. But they don't ask to go back to the Court of Appeals on the two other issues. Has that been forfeited, waived, or anything else? And sometimes this issue is not unusual where the Court of Appeals makes a decision on one issue and there are several others. But usually the parties note that in their briefs and either brief the issue and ask us to take it, which they can, or they say send it back. But I'm at a loss to know what's your view on all of this.
My view, you'll have to ask Mr. O'Neill.
Well, I plan on doing that. Mr. O'Neill has the opportunity to think it through more carefully than I've given you.
Yes,
but
yes.
You get a rebuttal for 5 minutes.
I do get equal time. All right. No, that's fine. My view is that those issues are not on appeal here.
They're not what?
They are not on appeal here. We petitioned this court to appeal based on the Court of Appeals decision on the absent witness instruction. We did address the issues that they raised in their brief here at the Supreme Court in our reply brief, and we very strongly believe that there's ample credible evidence to support this verdict, and because of the credible evidence that there's nothing in the interest of justice. This is no different than any other slip and fall, trip and fall accident where the defendant claims it's the plaintiff's fault and the plaintiff claims it's the condition of the premises that caused the accident. Here they went with the videotape saying that that was sufficient to show that it was all Mr. Kochansky's fault. The jury didn't agree with them. Two of the jurors agreed to put some fault on Mr. Kochansky. We don't know how much. But on balance, they tried that and they lost. And from the standpoint of those being viable appeal issues at this level, I don't believe they are. If you want me to address some of the credible evidence that we believe is there, I certainly can.
Stay with the main event. Can you tell me, Counselor, where in the record it says what these absent witnesses would have testified to?
It does not say in the record what they would have testified to other than Super America's witness list, which said that they would testify about the facts of the accident and also...
Is the witness list a piece of evidence?
It's not a piece of evidence, but it's a pleading signed by the party's representative, the lawyer. And, of course, to that extent, it informed the court as far as what these witnesses would have testified to, but it is not evidence.
Okay. So there isn't anything in the record that shows that they would be able to testify about a material issue in dispute, then?
There is nothing in the record that shows what they would testify to. However, Super America, as a corporation, can only testify through its employees. So Super America essentially made the choice not to put in any evidence of what was done at the station that day to keep the premises safe or what their policy, whether they had reasonable policies and procedures in place, and whether that be through current employees at Super America.
But they're only the defendants. They can shut their mouths and win. You're the plaintiff.
That's correct.
Okay. So you have to establish what the policies were. They don't have to establish they had a policy. Maybe they didn't have any policies.
Well, maybe they didn't. The law requires that they have reasonable policies in place.
Right, your burden to establish, correct?
That's our burden to establish. Okay. And if they come in with no evidence, then we believe that we've established that.
How can you establish it without evidence? Just because they put on nothing doesn't mean you get the point on your side of the ledger when it's your burden to prove.
No,
you
it doesn't. But it does mean that if it's more natural for them to call a witness to testify about those issues and they've got witnesses on their list designated to testify about those issues and they decide not to call that witness, then it walks into the negative inference
when
of the absent witness.
When it's your burden of proof to prove that they either didn't have appropriate policies or the policies were not followed, I don't get how because they shut their mouths and said nothing about it, you win on that issue. I think you have to show that. That's your burden of proof.
It doesn't mean we win on that issue. But I believe it does mean that we get the absent witness instruction to draw the negative inference that they're choosing not to put on evidence, on information that's in their control.
Well, if you could have subpoenaed these folks. You knew their names.
We certainly could have. It was more natural for Super America to subpoena them because they were their former employees, and that's exactly what Judge Seifert found.
Well, it may, because they were their former employees, I mean, people subpoena other folks as former employees all the time to establish an element that they need to support their claim.
That's true, and I actually probably misspoke when I said former employees. In deference to Justice Gableman's question, there's no evidence in the record that they were former employees. There's attorney argument in the record that says they're former employees. The interrogatory answers just gave their positions as being former manager, former customer service representative, former shelf stocker.
But without saying whether they were former or current.
Correct. Okay. Correct.
Without saying what?
Whether they were former or current employees. It just said that this was formerly their position without saying what if any position they currently had.
Now, the special verdict question was as follows. One, was Speedway, through the acts of its employees, negligent in failing to maintain the premises as safe as its nature would reasonably permit? Right?
That's correct.
So maybe all that had to be shown was the video, which would show the jury that there was too much accumulation from their standpoint. Wasn't that enough evidence to answer question number one without policy?
I certainly believe it's enough credible evidence to sustain that yes answer on the verdict. Absolutely.
The verdict had instructions on safe place and had instructions on ordinary negligence, right?
Correct. And the safe place instruction had instruction or explanations to the jury about their requirement to have policies and procedures in place to keep the...
If you didn't prove it, the jury could still answer this yes, because they could answer it on a just straight negligence case.
That is correct.
So whether you brought in anything about the policies or not is not relevant. I mean, it may be relevant. It may have made your case stronger, but you had enough. Your view is you had enough evidence.
But it's not case dispositive. Yes.
Not case dispositive.
I agree.
Okay. Well, that seems to me to be what you're arguing on, and what I hear from these questions is a bigger issue, which is at issue in this case as I read the briefs. Who has, first of all, the judge has discretion on what instructions to give and the wording, right?
Yes.
The judge has no discretion to give an instruction that misstates the law, right?
I agree.
Okay. That's an error of law. It's an erroneous exercise of discretion. The end. Was this an erroneous statement of the law?
No, it was the Wisconsin Civil Jury Instruction 410.
And has been upheld as a correct statement of the absence witness. Okay. And I'll ask the same question of Mr. O'Neill. All right. The second aspect, then, in reviewing the instruction is to say, I think, do the facts justify giving the instruction? That is, was a witness material, right? Were these absent witnesses material? And what does material mean? And two, was there control? Or what's the other phrase in this?
Natural.
Natural.
Was there control, or was it more natural for that party to call the witness?
That's right. So those are the issues. And the judge, before he or the court, before it gives the instruction, has to have sufficient enough facts before the jury to say, there's a question about whether it's material, or I really think it is material, or have enough facts before the court to say it's more natural or control in the defendant, right?
Correct.
All right. Or the court can say, as a matter of law, no jury could find this was material, and no jury could find that it was more natural for Super America to call these witnesses, right?
Yes.
And if the court finds that, then as a matter of law, it should not give that instruction. It would be error because the facts don't substantiate it.
I agree that the instruction should not be given if the requisite elements have not been established.
And who has the burden to establish these elements?
We believe that as the proponent of the instruction, we had the burden to establish those elements.
You had the burden to establish. What was the burden on the defendant?
If the defendant was taking the position that the witnesses were not called because they were unavailable or could not be subpoenaed, we believe that burden shifts to the defendant once, as the proponent of the instruction, we have established that they failed to call a material witness who would give probative testimony, and it was more natural for that party to call the witness or the witness was in that party's control.
Well, the instruction itself says that the party that failed to call the witnesses is required to give a satisfactory explanation for not calling the witness.
That's correct.
So that is the burden on the defendant.
That's the shift that I talked about. Okay. That if we establish the elements to give the instruction, and they're going to try to avoid the negative inference by saying that we couldn't call this, we were precluded from calling this party, then that's their burden.
And what was their explanation for not calling the witness? There was an explanation.
There was no evidence, nothing evidentiary in the record. There was argument by their lawyer, Mr. O'Neill, at both opening statement and closing. On opening, he talked about only the former manager, who is the one with the last known address in Pennsylvania, and he said that they had attempted to contact him and could not. At closing, he essentially argued that all of the witnesses were cumulative to the videotape and therefore weren't called.
Yeah.
Counsel, if I understood your first answer, or your answer to the Chief Justice's first question in her most recent round of questioning, she asked you, well, would it have been sufficient for the plaintiff to simply introduce the video to establish negligence? My understanding is you answered yes. True?
That's correct. We did more than that, but yes.
Understood. But if it's sufficient for the plaintiff to introduce the video to establish negligence, why wouldn't it be sufficient for the defense to say, fine, go ahead, introduce the video, because we think it establishes the opposite, that we did take care of the property, that it wasn't a normal condition. Why isn't that sufficient?
Well,
let the jury decide.
Ultimately, sufficiency is for the jury to decide. But if there are witnesses that it's more natural for the defendant to call who have probative evidence about what happened or about the condition of the premises or the policies and procedures, and they don't call them, then under 410, we are entitled to an absent witness instruction. And if they want to argue that the witnesses are cumulative, as they did, if they want to argue that the witnesses are cumulative, that they weren't necessary, in his closing statement he said, well, the plaintiffs just want to extend the trial because they want us to call all these other witnesses and we don't need them. He certainly was free to argue that. Whether the jury applied the inference or not, we don't know because it's not mandatory. The jury under 410,
If this incident had occurred not on the snowy, wintry day that it took place, but on a nice June day, 72 degrees and clear, no precipitation, and the video showed, in essence, the relevant portions of what happened, your client tripping and falling. And you introduced the video to say, clearly, there was negligence here because of whatever reason. Would Super America still have had to call employees to say, these are our policies for how we maintain our property. This is what we do. Or would the video be sufficient?
If under the hypothetical scenario that you raise, I'll confess I hadn't thought about that, but it would really depend then on what the claimed problem with the premises was. If it was just a curb that was visible on the video, and the only question was whether the curb should have been there or not, then it may not. Then perhaps witnesses on policies and procedures would not have been important. But when you're talking about removing snow, salting the premises to avoid it being slippery, then whatever their policies and procedures are and what their employees did to keep the premises safe does become much more of an issue.
Counsel?
Yes.
I know your time is up, but when you come back up, if it's not too much trouble, if you have cases where the defendant, not the plaintiff, but the defendant, not calling witnesses, where it was deemed proper for the court to give the absent witness instruction, if you have any cases that support that proposition directly on point, I'd appreciate it. I see some where it involves the defendant, but in the end, it looks like the court said, you know, the instruction shouldn't have been given. So where the defendant failed to call and the instruction was properly given, I'm looking for those cases.
All right. I can find a few of those.
Yes,
Justice Prosser.
I'm not quite sure how to ask this question. The verdict was $327,000.
Yes, sir.
Was there a general understanding among all the parties that this was in the range of what was at stake in the case?
There was certainly an understanding from the plaintiff's standpoint as to the severity of the injuries that Mr. Kluczynski suffered. The nature of the fracture of his arm and his wrist, and then the time he had a liver problem that intervened, so they couldn't fix the fracture right away, so he had to live in an extreme amount of pain for quite some time. You can ask Mr. O'Neill what the defendant's perspective of the case was and whether that was within their expected verdict range or not. But it was within the range that we were targeting the case as plaintiff's counsel.
Well, we could look at closing arguments, right? For what you were asking for?
Yes.
No one's challenged the amount as being not supported by the evidence.
No, they have not.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. O'Neill, representing Speedway Super America.
May it please the court. I'm Patrick O'Neill, and I represent Defendant Appellant Speedway Super America, LLC. To start, I'd like to address the Court of Appeals' dissent regarding the issues of naturalness and materiality. The dissent agreed with the trial court that it was more natural for Speedway to call the former employees as witnesses than for Kluczynski.
Could you speak up, counsel? This room is difficult in its acoustics, and so I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Your Honor. The dissent states that Speedway, not Kluczynski, placed these former employees on its witness list. However, with all due respect to the dissent, Kluczynski, in fact, listed these people on its own witness list several months before Speedway did. Placement on a witness list does not necessarily make that witness more available to a party or more natural for that party to call.
Counsel, you happen to be starting with an issue that is, for me, a problem with the Court of Appeals opinion, and that is the more natural discussion in paragraph 19 of the opinion. I read paragraph 19 of the Court of Appeals opinion to be a per se rule. It starts out in its discussion of more natural. And do you happen to have that easily available to you?
I believe I do, Your Honor.
I don't have it in your appendix. The response brief.
Paragraph 19, as I said, of the Court of Appeals opinion, I'm talking about the majority opinion, left me with the impression that this was a per se rule, which could be, may not be, but could be problematic because we generally think of these inquiries as fact-intensive rather than per se. So let's go through it. Paragraph 19. It starts with the first sentence dealing with more natural for Speedway to call the witness. It says, now in discussing what's natural, where a relationship exists between one of the parties and the witness, such as part of the family or employee, employer, then it's more natural. So you got family members and employee, employer. However, when no such relationship or its equivalent, whatever that means, I took that to mean, you know, contractor, I don't know exactly what it means, that's what I took it to mean, no such inference arises. So we still, in my mind, have family and employee and employer relationship. Thus, it is improper to give the absent witness instruction when the witness is equally available to both parties. Okay, got that. As noted, there is no evidence in the record that the potential witnesses were in fact employed by Speedway. Therefore, if they were not employees, they were equally available to both parties, and it was more natural for Speedway to call them. They are setting up, in my mind, a per se rule that if they were not currently employed or family members, then it's not a fact inquiry, but rather former employees are per se available, equal to both parties, and not more natural. That's the way I read that. Tell me if my reading is incorrect.
Well, I believe that your reading is correct.
Except you might want to start out with the third line, where it says may be more natural, because that was not included in Justice Bradley's recitation.
You've got it in front of you. I don't mean to trick you at all. That's why I asked you. So,
right.
It
says
may be more natural.
That may inform your...
I hope would be foregone by the fact that I've asked you to put it in front of you.
Sure. And that may inform your answer to Justice Bradley's question.
Thank you, Justice Gableman.
Thank you, Justice Gableman.
You're more than welcome, Anne.
And I still think that in this particular case, there's no evidence in the record that Speedway was still employing these people. Maybe there would be, there's absolutely no evidence in the record as to the relationship between Speedway and these former employees, except that they're former employees. Perhaps there could be some sort of an instance where a former employee has some sort of ongoing relationship with people from the store, where they're at the store a lot, and that would make them more available. But that's certainly not in the evidence in this particular case. So I don't know if there's a bright line rule where if somebody's an employee, where it has to be where they're an employer-employee relationship or familial relationship in order for there to be for it to be more natural for a party to call a witness.
That's what I would think, too. I mean, that's what makes sense to me. That's why it caused me pause when they said there is no evidence in the record that the potential witnesses were, in fact, employed by Speedway during the trial. If it had said or had some kind of special relationship as former employees, but it doesn't say that. Therefore, they were equally available. That's my problem.
Well, but the evidence shows in this case that they weren't equally available.
There is no evidence in this case.
Well, the interrogatory responses were read into evidence at the trial.
Well, were they taken as such? I'm not so sure. They were read in. Were they presented as evidence of unavailability? was it presented as evidence that there was no continuing relationship through pension, through contracts of what they might or might not do, or might not say about Super America? You know, there are strange employment contracts that have strange provisions in it. None of that's in the record. And in the Thorson case, which is in paragraph 19, upon which this Court of Appeals relies, in that case, you had a passenger on the bus. And the question was, did the bus driver's company have a special relationship with the passenger so that the passenger should be called by it? And the Court said, no, looks equal. This is a passenger. Stranger, total stranger to both parties. That's not true here.
Chief Justice, in Chambers, representations were made by myself to the trial court that these were former employees.
Are they
employees.
On the record?
They were on the record, Your Honor, yes. They were recorded on the record. And that could be considered an offer of proof. Under the
but it's not evidence.
Schleheim versus Juris case.
But it's not evidence, right?
And
you can't testify. Right? You could testify, but then you'll have other problems being counsel.
Yes, Your Honor, that would be problematic.
When you started out talking with us, you said you wanted to look at Judge Fine's dissent, and I'd like to be able to direct you back to that. The first thing you talked about was his statement that Speedway, not Kochanski, placed these employees on the witness list, and it was your statement to us that's not accurate, that in fact Kochanski placed them on his own witness list, and they did it prior to Speedway. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, Your Honor, that's
correct. I want to move to the next part of the dissent, which is a part that interests me. It says Speedway had an interest in persuading the jury that its policies in connection with possible unsafe snow accumulation were not flawed. Now, wasn't it the burden of proof of the plaintiff to show that, in fact, either the policies were flawed or you didn't follow the policies?
Yes, Your Honor. That is the plaintiff's burden of proof. Okay. As defendant, we only have the burden of proof with regard to affirmative defense.
Okay. So what did the plaintiff put on whereby your interest arose in controverting some evidence that there were possible unsafe snow accumulations or your policies about them were flawed? What was put on at the first part for this interest that Judge Fine talks about here to arise? What did they put on to show the policies were not proper or were not followed?
Well, it's our position that they didn't put anything into evidence with regard to any policies or procedures, even though they had the burden of proving that Speedway was negligent.
So there was no testimony where the inference would come that the policies and procedures were either not appropriate or were not followed?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Do you take that position because you think that the video shows a natural condition or a safe condition of the curb?
Exactly, Your Honor. We relied upon the video. The video showed exactly how the premises occurred at the time of the incident. Mr. Kochanski does not dispute that. He concedes that that's the way the premises existed at the time that he fell and that he walked into the curbing at a point where the curbing appeared to be yellow, that was apparent. And
is that on the record that he saw the yellow stripe? Is that in the record in his testimony?
Yes. He testified that he did, as he approached the curbing, he did see yellow in areas.
But that, despite that, he assumed that there was a cutout section there, which turned out to be 4 or 5 feet in the different direction.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Can the Kochanskis win even if they say nothing about the policies just on the basis of the video, that video in the juror's view show bad maintenance? You got a jury trial here.
Well, I believe that it would be up to the jury to decide based upon the video evidence as to whether Speedway was negligent or not.
In maintenance.
In maintenance.
Regardless of its policies.
That is correct, Your Honor. However, I believe in this case that the absent witness instruction was erroneously given.
I know, but I just, let's forget that for a moment. There was enough evidence here to support a jury verdict that this was not maintained reasonably under a negligent standard. That was what the jury was asked.
Yes, Your Honor.
And they said that your company was negligent. Your client was negligent.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. They didn't have to claim safe place in this case. There were two claims. They didn't have to claim safe place. They have a good, straightforward, might have had a good, straightforward negligence claim. And that was what the jury was instructed, and that's what they found.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, seems to me you are saying shouldn't have given the absent witness instruction, and that prejudiced your client in your client's view of the evidence, in your client's view of the video.
Yes, Your Honor.
As I understand it, that really is your position, that the evidence was there, but not that strong. Jury might have gone either way, and that this pushed them over because it indicated to them that they could think that your client was deceptive by failing to bring in witnesses, their former employees, who knew what was happening, who knew when the last salt was spread, who knew what the policies were, right? Isn't that your position in a nutshell?
That, Your Honor, plus the fact of the way that Kochansky argued the absent witness instruction in his closing argument.
Sure. And they did. And even if they had not given the instruction, the court hadn't given the instruction, don't the cases say he could have argued that anyway? Where were the employees? Where were they to testify that it was salted or what was done? I mean, that's good argument, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, and the case law does say that. But jury instructions have a special place in jurisprudence. They're very strong, and when lay people hear those, they put a lot of credence into them, as they should.
But it's a very discretionary inference. It doesn't say you shall infer, you shall presume. It says you may infer. And you ought to listen carefully to the defendant's reasoning for not calling them. What was your reasoning?
Reasoning was that the videotape showed everything that needed to be displayed.
Videotape does not show the policies, right? No one showed policies.
But it
it doesn't show when the last salt was put on or when it was last shuffled.
But it shows the results of any policies,
That's right.
Of any work. There's testimony, there's evidence in the record about how long it was snowing, a few hours. Testimony about how much it snowed, anywhere between a half inch and 2 inches. And that, together with the videotape evidence, would allow a jury to make a determination whether policies and procedures were adequately applied.
Right, the ultimate result of negligence in maintaining. Right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Could I ask, when was the first time that the absent jury instruction came up in this case?
I believe it was early in the trial. I believe it was the first day of the trial.
20 days
after Mr. Kochansky testified.
Okay, so there was no conference on jury instructions before the trial or anything before trial?
Well, before the trial, pursuant to Milwaukee County local procedure, the parties exchanged proposed jury instructions, and the absent witness instruction was not included in that packet that Kochanski's attorney forwarded before the trial. So to answer your question, it was not discussed before the trial.
Did you think this was a $300,000 case in the event that your side lost?
Justice Prosser, to be honest, no, I did not. The plaintiff incurred about $100,000 in medical bills, but we did have an independent medical examiner whose testimony was that a lot of the treatment was unrelated, a lot of the treatment was pre-existing. He had, you know, Mr. Kochanski had made some claim for a wrist injury in addition to his arm, to his broken arm, and the independent medical examiner testified that the wrist was unrelated. So the verdicts, the size of the verdict shocked me, yes, it did.
Did you put that witness on?
Oh, the independent medical doctor? Yes, I did, Your Honor.
I assume that the plaintiff had testimony presented that would advance that the $100,000 were reasonable and necessary, or is that a presumption incorrect?
No, your presumption is correct. He had a doctor testify.
Yeah. Are you finished? If this had been a situation where the employees or some of them were still current, how does that affect your analysis and argument, would it?
Well, if there were some current employees, that I think that would have made a difference, because then there's an employer-employee relationship, and it's easier to compel that person to appear. That person who's a current employee is much more willing or much more apt to testify favorably for their employer.
So if you had one or more of these individuals who were currently employed and you did not call that employee, is it your position that it would have been appropriate then for the court to give the missing witness instruction?
Yeah, I think in this case, with the strong video that we had, the clear video, I still don't think, even if they were current employees, that the absent witness instruction would have been appropriate.
Well, you're mixing apples and oranges. You're saying your trial strategy would have been the same. You wouldn't have called them, right? But that's what I hear you saying. But the question is, was it material? Was material, and Judge Fein says in his dissent, material means, do they have something to offer about the policies and practices? Okay. Was it material? Was there control? Well, I think you would say if it were a current employee, there would be control. And if it's material and it's control, then why wouldn't you be subject to a missing witness instruction?
I believe that both elements of materiality and control need to be present. So I would take the position that the material, therefore, it doesn't make any difference if they're under my control. I believe under the Thorson case, there has to be materiality and the conjunctive, not the disjunctive, control.
It seems to me that certainly you advance that because you're saying a picture says a thousand words, but when you look at the complaint and it is alleging failure to maintain, certainly in the there is an issue of maintenance in this case. And materiality, if you define materiality as to an issue in the case, now you may take a different view of the issue, but it is an issue in the case. Material to an issue of the case that makes its truth more or less, I forget.
get more, it's probative of the consequences.
But please don't lose sight of the fact that this is a trip and fall, not a slip and fall.
What's the difference?
Well, it would be material if it was a slip and fall, because these policies and procedures would address snow accumulation, ice accumulation. You put salt down to melt ice. But Mr. Kochanski walked into a curb that was several inches high, that was painted on the side in yellow and painted on the top edge in yellow, and that's apparent on the videotape, and he walked right into it. So policies and procedures, they're not material in this case because it is a trip and fall.
Also, is there anything in the record about what these particular witnesses would have said if they were caught?
No, there is not.
So we don't even know if they knew anything about policies and procedures, correct?
Not from the record. That's correct.
Just so that we're using the right words, the record has, as I understand it, information that they would be testifying to policies and procedures because you filed a witness list, and that's part of the record. But there's no evidence. Am I correct?
Yes, thank you for making that distinction.
I want to raise the question that I raised with Mr. Anderson. If Mr. Anderson's client wins here on the absent witness issue, is that the end of this case? What about your other two issues that the Court of Appeals didn't reach, and you didn't seem to preserve them in your briefs or in your response?
Well, I did address the material or the weight of the evidence issue in my response brief toward the end in relation to the prejudice arguments.
That's right. But not directly.
Not directly, Your Honor. I believe that the order, when the petition was granted, limited review to the absent witness instruction, and that's why the other issues weren't briefed.
If you should not prevail here at the end of the case, we don't have to send it to the Court of Appeals. We don't have to reach your other two issues. That's your position.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. That clarifies it, and it's very helpful to me. Thank you.
Thank you. In addition, the reading of the back. There's no reasonable relationship between Speedway not producing the uncalled witness and the negative inference allowed by the absent witness instruction. And this is something that the trial court didn't address in its analysis. In addition to the materiality and the control and the naturalness, there needs to be a showing of a reasonable relationship between the failure to call the witness and a negative inference. And, for this reason, the missing witness instruction should be very narrowly construed. And that narrow construction means that it shouldn't have been applied in this particular case. Speedway chose to use the surveillance footage to prove it was not negligent, to prove that conditions on the premises were kept up to a reasonably safe standard, and Kochanski fell because of his own negligence. No witnesses were necessary to testify as to whether Speedway followed its policies or procedures regarding snow removal, because the video showed the jurors everything they needed to know. In conclusion, the witnesses
before
in question.
Before you do that, counsel, you stated that our order taking this petition for review said you couldn't argue any other issues. This is our standard order, and it says the petition for review is granted, and then the petitioners, which is Mr. Anderson's clients, may not raise or argue issues not set forth in the petition for review. It doesn't say anything about what you can do and there are rules about what you have to, when you file a cross appeal, a cross petition for review, and when you can argue issues. But I take it from you, this will end the case.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you for clarifying that, Chief Justice.
Yeah, I just didn't want the other members of the court to take that because, as you stated it, because it is not what the order says. But that's fine, as long as we all understand each other.
Thank you.
Counsel, if I'm reading the record correctly, in closing arguments and then the jury's verdict, kind of hearkening back to Justice Prosser's earlier question to counsel, basically the jury awarded what the plaintiff asked for.
Exactly, Your Honor. Pretty close.
And except for with respect to the way.
Exactly.
Instead of 25-15, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Is evidence support that verdict? You're not challenging the amount. You're challenging the whole thing is invalid.
I'm not. Yeah. I believe that the amount reflects a prejudice that was created by the reading of the absent witness instruction, and not only the amount but also the fact that Kochanski was found not negligent, mm-hmm. and Speedway was found 100% negligent.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of things come to mind. One is when you have medical specials of 100,000, the old rule was anyway that you had set reserves at least three times medical specials. And so that surprises me that you would be so surprised by this amount.
Well, I guess it was a combination of the award plus the finding of no negligence on Mr. Kochanski. It was a combination of factors, really.
Because usually in these cases, or I shouldn't say usually, oftentimes in these cases, you're going to find a little bit of negligence on both sides. I mean,
but especially in cases where you're outside in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. in the wintertime, and you're aware of snow and ice. And
negligence on the defendant and often contributory negligence on the plaintiff. Not always, but often.
And I believe that this case, the videotape made it very, very clear that it was appropriate for the jury to assess negligence on Mr. Kochanski, the plaintiff.
Did it make it very, very clear that it was appropriate to assess no negligence on the defendant?
Well,
the jury did the opposite, right?
Exactly, yeah.
I know, but your position is that the video is so clear that we don't have to call anyone. There is no negligence on the defendant. I mean, that's what I understand your position to be, counsel.
That would be a strong argument that we could make. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, you were starting to say in conclusion, your red light is on, but I'd like to give you a very few moments, to do a conclusion.
In conclusion, the witnesses in question are not material and not within Speedway's control. It was not more natural for Speedway to call these witnesses than for Kochanski to call these witnesses. Furthermore, there is no reasonable relationship between the failure to call the witnesses and the inference that their testimony would be negative for Speedway. Finally, the erroneous reading of the absent witness instruction prejudiced Speedway. Therefore, Speedway respectfully requests that the Court of Appeals decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And I'm glad that although the bench has been talking about control, it doesn't have to be a control issue. It's a natural, also whether it's more natural. Okay, thank you.
If I could, on rebuttal, just harken back to a few questions that were asked to Mr. O'Neill. Justice Prosser, you asked when the issue arose. The issue arose of the absent witness instruction arose on the morning of the second day of trial. The trial started after lunch. In voir dire and in opening statement, Mr. O'Neill informed the jury that he would not be calling any witnesses, that he would be relying on the videotape. Mr. Kochanski started testifying that afternoon, testified for about a half hour, just gave background, and then the next morning the court started out with a verdict conference, which included a discussion and his ruling that the absent witness instruction would be read based on what was told to the jury at voir dire and at and in opening statement. And then there was subsequent discussions during the course of the trial about the absent witness instruction. Justice Ziegler, in response to your question, I'll cite you to two cases. One is Coney versus Milwaukee Transport, in which this court held that the failure to call an employee by the employer led to the inference that the employer or created the burden that the employer had to explain why the witness was not called. And then the second case is Deschamps versus Monarch Life Insurance, where the insurance defendant insurance company's investigator interviewed the plaintiff. The investigator was not called. The plaintiff argued for and got the absent witness instruction. The defendant argued that the investigator's testimony would have been cumulative because the plaintiff testified about the interview, and the Supreme Court said no, it would not have. The defendant's version of the interview would have been probative for the jury.
You have the cites handy, counsel.
I do have the cite on Deschamps, 204 with second 137.
It's cited in your brief, isn't it?
It is.
And Coney's 8, Wisconsin 2nd, 520.
Thanks. I didn't have Coney.
Coney's 1959, and Deschamps is 1996 Court of Appeals.
There's one other case, Shaw versus Woodkey, which talked about the defendant's failure to produce a witness. But in that case, the absence of the witness was explained because the witness was on military service out of state. And I believe my recollection is the court did not give the witness absent witness instruction in that case because of that, but that was involved the defendant's witness as well.
So did you call every witness on your witness list?
No.
Okay. That's the rub here. What makes this case so different? I mean, you can't require the other side to call everyone on their witness list. You can't even require them to call one witness.
Absolutely not. But in a situation here where the evidence was they had their video evidence, we had Mr. Kochanski's testimony, who testified that it was lightly snowing, had been snowing all morning. There was enough snow accumulation at that point where he could not see the yellow stripe, where he could not see the curb, and he either slipped or tripped and fell. In that case, what the five employees at the store did that morning to keep the premises safe, if anything, becomes relevant. Likewise, their policies and procedures for how much snow has to accumulate, when do they salt, that type of thing, certainly becomes relevant to the question of negligence. And if they take the position that we don't have to put on any witnesses to come in and explain these things, Judge Seifert found that there was enough of a natural relationship there that the adverse inference could be drawn that they weren't putting these people on. And in fact, I'll submit that if one of those employees had been out salting or shoveling 15 minutes or 30 minutes before Mr. Kochanski fell, you can darn well bet that witness would have testified. The inference was there. Judge Seifert, hearkening back to Justice Bradley and the paragraph 19 per se rule, Judge Seifert found there was enough of a natural relationship based on this record that they were at least employees at the time of the accident and could have had an ongoing relationship with Super America, that the instruction was justified. That was his discretionary interpretation of the evidence, and the Court of Appeals just disagreed with that, which is not a proper review by the Court of Appeals of his discretion.
Just one final question. With respect to the cases that you gave me, are those employees largely, current employees?
Coney versus Milwaukee, I believe... My recollection in Deschamps was that he was still an employee as well.
So are you asking for an expansion of?
No, I don't think there should be a per se rule that former employees have enough of a relationship. I think it depends on the facts in the case and the inferences that are drawn from those facts.
Okay. Are there any cases where former employees fit the absent jury instruction?
I am not aware of any cases of former employees.
Okay. Thanks.
There's some discussion in one of the briefs about the fact that a former employee may have a relationship as a result of rules on pension or profit sharing or
that was part
restrictive
of
covenants, etc. So you don't know whether there's a relationship.
Maybe right. That was part of Judge Seifert's ruling. When he was finding that there was enough of a relationship. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I want to, on behalf of the court, thank both counsel for their briefs and presentation on absent witness instruction. The absent witness instruction goes back to, I think it's the 18th century or before, according to Wigmore, and still with us. And he had a rash of cases on it, but haven't had for a while, and here we are again. And so thank you both for your discussion. And so ends the hearing on 11AP 1956, James E. Koshansky versus Speedway Super America, LLC. Now, today is the first Wednesday of the month. So at 11 o'clock, we will have a demonstration of the workings of our fire alarm system, which we had for quite a number of days recently on, but we'll give it another shot. So rather than start the argument and then interrupt it by the loud noise, the court will take a recess until after the alarms have concluded. Then we'll call the second case. We are in recess.